It's the Adult in the Room podcast with Victoria Taft. That's me. This week, a little something different. I'm going over the hit list of news stories, but especially the news and Democratic Party rewriting of COVID history right before our eyes. Things are now being reported that conservatives and other people who have really rethought the whole COVID pandemic have been saying for months and indeed over a year, well over a year. And they got canceled for it. And they got removed from polite society. And tax dollars were used to defame them. This is serious. And it's happening in real time. Hope you're paying attention. So I'm kicking around stuff with my old friend, Mark Griffith. Before we get into it, here's a word from our Adult in the Room podcast sponsor. Mark Griffith, welcome to the Adult in the Room podcast. You're fun, you're funny, your tech skill set, not so great, probably less than mine, which is really saying something. And I've been a guest on your radio show in the past. You've granted me an audience with you on my podcast. Now, I wanted to go over a few news items of interest that I thought we could discuss and kick around a little bit today. So, first, however, tell people who you are. Have you got a couple of sentences in here to tell us who you are, what you're about?
Well, let's start with the most important thing. My preferred pronouns are either Your Majesty or My Lord. I was going to go with My Liege, but I thought that was pretentious.
Really?
So I let people decide whether they want to say My Lord or Your Majesty, because I see myself as royalty. Uh-huh. I identify that way.
I see.
So I'm 61 years old. I grew up in Oklahoma. I've been in Colorado for 40-something years since I got out of college. I've done a lot of different things. I just bought a spade truck. I live on some acreage outside of Denver, so I'm going to be selling some trees that I've grown over the years.
Oh.
But I've sold cars. I've had a radio show. I don't have the show anymore. The lockdown's kind of squeezed off all my sponsors, but I'm married to the same woman for ever, and we're happy about a third of the time. And you can guess which third that is. So,
well, my pronouns are she, ribeye, and cheddar cheese. I just identify as someone who likes to eat lots of red meat, although I shouldn't as much. And kale, perhaps kale. Well, let's get into it, shall we?
Yep.
FOIA requested emails obtained by the New York Post confirm that the National School Board Association was asked by the Education Secretary to please come up with some scary sounding stories using the words domestic terrorism so that Merrick Garland could employ his henchmen at the FBI to come and get him and invoke the Patriot Act to get them, shut them down, and shut them up.
Thank you, George W. Bush. So the DOJ is going to form an actual domestic terrorism task force that's going to be tasked for putting into practice. So the school board thing is connected to the January 6th thing. The January 6th thing was the pretext, which I think is anybody paying attention knew. I knew within several days, if not a couple of days, that January 6th was a false flag operation. It was a Reichstag fire incident, totally planned by the feds in conjunction with Pelosi. I even believe that there are a few Republicans that were in on it. It's one of the reasons why you're not seeing hardly any Republican lawmakers come to the defense of those people who are being tortured in those federal prison facilities in D.C.
Interesting.
Everybody's laying low. I don't know what all their motivations are, but I know that most politicians, their worst nightmare, their worst fear is to have Donald Trump return to the White House.
Why is that?
Because he's such a disruptor. He doesn't play by the rules, their rules. I don't mean that he breaks the law, but he just came into Washington and was not going to, just the way he talks back to reporters, that was so refreshing. That's why we love him. That's one of the reasons we kind of sort of like Ted and Rand Paul is they kind of don't accept the narrative of the reporter.
Yeah.
Like, but most, you know, Mitt Romney's a perfect example. They basically called him Hitler and he wants to be their friend now. I mean, you know, it's just, they did call him Hitler. They compared him to Hitler. And most politicians
they
are
called
like
him a murderer.
Yes.
Remember when his employee had some insurance issue, which absolutely had nothing to do with Mitt Romney whatsoever, and they said that he was responsible for her death.
Well, he probably put her in a binder, too, so.
Oh, yeah. Remember the binders? Now you hear binders all the time. Very interesting. So you think that some Republicans were in on it, huh?
Well, if they weren't in on it, they were aware of what was going on. You know, one of the things that I saw this on Twitter or somewhere is a lot of these lawmakers have said that January 6th was a day of terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about it, that may have been the most chaotic moment in those people's cloistered lives. These people are, for the most part, they all go to the same sorts of schools. Now, there's exceptions. But for the most part, these people are all lawyers. They've all been raised in a middle to upper middle class home, except for a few. And so they've lived very sheltered lives. I mean, I would say that the vast majority of the people in Congress wouldn't know which end of a gun to pick up. And so they've never been to a shooting range. They've never been pheasant hunting. They've never been exposed to the rough and tumble of everyday life. And so for them, they were terrified on January 6th. Now, I have argued since day one that I thought January 6th was on net a good thing because, first of all, they don't need a pretext for what they're doing. Now, they're using it as a pretext, but if they didn't have January 6th, they'd use something else. I give you the school board issue.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. I
give you the
I
school
that.
Board. Now, the fact is that our lawmakers...
Let me just pause you here. Hold on a second.
Sure.
Because the previous pretext was that Donald Trump was a Russian secret agent.
Right.
And so they tried to destroy his presidency and indeed his campaign because he was a Russian secret agent. And that was a false thing. It was a hoax story. It was something that they rolled out, got the media to buy into, the national security, all the triple alphabet agencies were all involved. They gave it breath. They gave it oxygen. They gave it everything. And all of a sudden, it was the biggest gaslighting thing I've seen since COVID. So they've had that. Then they went to the school board thing. And then, of course, we have COVID. You know, you can't help but have to lock down people and do bad things to people and call them domestic terrorists. And they created something out of nothing with respect to the January 6th thing when they were letting some people broke in. That was what horrified me.
Well, here's the thing. The people that broke in were feds and people working for the feds.
There's, well, we don't know that for sure.
Well, there's video out there that we've seen where people like Ray Epps and other people, first of all these feds look alike. They wear the same clothing. They're all very trim and they're young males. They tend to be 20 and 30 and 40 year old males, not overweight. And so you can pick them out of a crowd. You've seen the meme on Twitter and Facebook of the January 6th reunion. By the way, if you haven't checked it out, Babylon Bee has a great January 6th reunion video that you have to watch.
Okay.
It is hilarious. Have you seen it?
I don't think I have.
No, it is so... They go around interviewing people who came back to the Capitol for a reunion, and they're all basically feds, except for one CNN reporter.
That event that was not an event and where they got that iconic photograph of all the feds hanging around?
No. This is a Babylon Bee deal. It's a humorous thing. But anyway, okay. I just recommend it. Babylon Bee just does great work. You know, the funny thing about the Bee lately is the last 5-6 years, they've had a hard time staying ahead of reality with satire. Because reality overruns their satire. And it's one of the reasons the Babylon Bee continually gets fact-checked by fact-checking places is because their satire turns out to be reality within a few days.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that that they're working very hard to implement a police state. Dennis Prager very wisely said, and I said it on my radio show in March of 2020, that this lockdown thing is a trial run for a police state. And the next thing they're going to do, I would almost argue, certainly will be climate change. Now,
I'm
sure that COVID has got some more iterations, because we know COVID was man-made. We know it's a bioweapon released by the Chinese on the world. Now, whether it was actually sent, I think it was probably a test. I had a professor from the University of Pennsylvania. I'm not going to use his name because his wife's family gets harassed in China anytime he's mentioned in the public sphere, but he's married to a Chinese lady, and he's been to China over 50 times. He's been at the gates of the Wuhan bio lab on a number of occasions. And he told me in late January of 2020 on my radio show, and I almost choked on my tongue. He said, we know, we're going to find out. This didn't come out of a wet market, Mark. He said,
sure.
This came out of a bioweapon, a level 4 bioweapon lab. And I'm like, professor, you know, you can't be making those kind of assertions. He says, just hear me out. And you know what? Within about 3 months, in April of 2020, Tom Cotton is saying it on the floor of the Senate. He's called a nut, a conspiracy theorist.
Sure.
And now it's taken that received wisdom. One of the things you asked me before we went on the air was, why do you think people are switching sides on COVID?
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
And that's what they did. One of the first ways they did that was with the origins of the Wuhan flu. People who said it came from the lab were considered racist and bigots and Chinophobes and all this other stuff. And then one day a switch was flipped and boom, everybody was like, oh yeah, of course it came out of a lab.
Exactly.
What are you talking about?
That's a good point. That was one of those things they did a switcheroo on. Let me list a few other things that they've done a switcheroo on, Mark. We have vaccines don't prevent transmission. That's just been uttered recently by the head of the CDC, something that we knew already. The asymptomatic don't spread the disease, something that has been the muddied message. And we've been told both things, you know, and or all this time. And
we knew early in spring of 2020 that asymptomatic spread was BS. And here's how we knew, is that in countries like Sweden that did not close their schools and we had good numbers, we knew that there was zero transmission of kids who tested positive for COVID between them and their teachers or their parents. Kids were not passing it on to adults. Now, we didn't know if that was true with adults, but we came to find out that's true.
Right.
What was I going to say about the... They're switching sides because they don't want to be caught with their pants down, so to speak.
Yeah.
They've been lying to us for 2 years, and now their lies are too obvious, so now they're just going to change their story and say, "Oh no, we never said it was would prevent transmission."
It's the old Clinton rule of saying that. Oh, going through, let's say what they did with Lois Lerner. She admitted something, right? She admitted, we've gone a little hard on some of the groups that are more conservative leaning. And she trickles that out at a news conference or a speech. And then so that at a later point they could say, well, you know, that's old news. We've already looked into that.
Right,
that's an old
Clinton
trick. Yeah, let me give you a couple more numbers because I want you to riff on these as well. 75% of COVID deaths are in people with four or more comorbidities, something that we've been talking about for well over a year. 40% of the people in hospitals did not come in for COVID. And when they were there, got tested because they test everyone. And in fact, now we find out that if they haven't been vaccinated within a certain short period of time, they are considered unvaccinated.
Two weeks.
So when they were tested, they test positive there and they are counted as a COVID hospitalization. Then finally, of the 836,000 deaths from COVID, the CDC has absolutely no idea or isn't telling anyone yet how many of those people died of COVID or with COVID. Go.
Right. We have the famous motorcycle accident, the 19-year-old kid coming home from college on a motorcycle, and he unfortunately met a very, very messy end with a truck.
Oof.
And they classified his death a COVID death. That happened in the summer of 2020. And there's been dozens of other examples. And they do this in such a way, the propaganda is so heavy. It's the messaging is so complete that unless you know where to look, and also it's difficult unless you're like me. Now, listen, you asked me by email, how did I become to be so irascible? I don't remember, but when I was a child, I just remember that if everybody in the classroom wanted to paint the trash cans in the parking lot blue, I wanted to paint them red. I never wanted to go wrong with the crowd. Part of it was I was never a cool kid. I was a kind of, I wasn't an intellectual kid. I wasn't a jock. I wasn't good looking and I wasn't big. I had a high voice until I was in my 30s. And so I always went against the narrative. Now, obviously, that gets you in trouble a lot of times, especially when you're young and dumb and you don't have any wisdom to know how to temper it. And you make a lot of enemies unnecessarily and get fired from a lot of jobs. But as you get older, it serves you very well because you learn that there's a lot of idiocy in mobs, and fear is just been
bring
so
us Barabbas. We want Barabbas.
Yes, it's so much. It's so depressing to see the fear that people are just terrified of something that there's great data on. I mean, that basically for kids, for people 20 and under, that age cohort, there's about 70 million people in the U.S. between 0 and 20. There's been about 700 deaths with COVID. That's a rounding error. I mean, that's a small number. And of those 700 people, almost none were healthy people. They were people who had, you know, heart transplants as an infant, or they had a liver transplant, or they were on chemo, or they were taking immunosuppression drugs because they had, whatever, some kind of cancer. So these are people that, by all rights, would probably not make it to 25 anyway.
Let me interject the CDC's top comorbidities. Cancer, chronic kidney disease, not in the order of importance. Chronic liver disease, chronic lung disease, dementia, diabetes, Down syndrome, heart conditions, HIV, immunocompromised, mental health conditions.
You missed the biggest one.
Overweight and obesity, because it starts with an O. This is obviously alphabetized.
Right.
Pregnancy, sickle cell, smoking, solid organ, blah, blah, blah. It goes on. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Obesity is the big one.
The number one is obesity because more people have it. So even if it's not the most serious, it's the one that has the most impact because so many Americans are obese.
Yeah.
I'm glad. And we're not videoing this. I just want to point out I'm very thin.
Me too. Epidemiologist, a cardiologist and clinician, Dr. I think it's Peter McCullough, right, has testified at least a couple of times before lawmakers, 85% of the people who died in this pandemic did so needlessly because they were not advised by federal officials or allowed to have already approved medicines such as antivirals, Z-Pak, zinc, monoclonal antibodies that would have reduced their symptoms and prevented them from going to the hospital.
Right. And I mean, the messaging is so strong. Listen, I have five kids and I'm so thankful they're all adults now. And for the most part, give or take, they still share my wife and I's values. They still are active in the church. They're Christians. They're all, unfortunately, college graduates. I've got one in the military. But my two oldest girls, my oldest daughter is a physician, and she hasn't spoke to me in about a year, a little more than a year, because I tried to give her information about ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, about the vaccines, the danger. And she said, I can't listen to that, because basically every doctor in Colorado, see, a lot of people don't know this. Every doctor in Colorado that works for a major healthcare company, and most do. One of the insidious things about Obamacare was the worst thing was that
consolidation.
It forced independent doctors who had a doctor over here, he had a nurse practitioner, he had a PA, and he's just doing his own thing and got three or four nurses on staff and some medical staff. They were forced to go join Centura or join Banner Health or join whatever.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, those doctors that are all employees now that used to be independent business people, They got a letter from their employer saying, you may not prescribe hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin for this disease or you'll lose your job. The governor of Colorado notified every pharmacy in the state in April of 2020 and said, if you have a doctor that's prescribing hydroxychloroquine and that person is not traveling overseas and it's not for malaria prevention, you're to report that doctor to the state and we will pull their medical license without any kind of a hearing. So every doctor, my own physician, who I got COVID the first time back in December of 2020, and in the summer of 2020, I started sending her stuff from Yale School of Public Health, Harvey Risch, and all these other people that were bringing up this, you know, showing the hydroxychloroquine, and then later on ivermectin were saving lives all over the planet. And she knows I'm a extremely well-informed patient, so she takes me seriously. She read the information and emailed me back and says, Mark, that's really interesting, but I'm not going to put my job on the line to prescribe this stuff. She just basically said, I'm going to keep my head down. And my daughter did the same thing.
Yes. They're not caring for patients. Why are they not caring for patients?
Because the government, they'll lose their license.
Yes.
I mean, my daughter was only... Yeah. She's only
but why the widespread rule? Because... There's a narrative.
Here's a reason. It's the same reason that when policemen in Denver in August of 2020 were at a Back the Blue rally, there was a Back the Blue rally that was put on by a local radio host, and about 200 pro-police, pro-Trump people were at this rally at Civic Center Plaza in downtown Denver, and there was about 200 cops in full SWAT gear standing there watching, and they were set upon by about 400 Antifa and Black Lives Matter people, and they got the crap beat out of them. Michelle Malkin narrowly left with her life. They got her in a car just before she was attacked, and those policemen all stood there and watched it go down. The reason? Because those policemen were told, if you do anything to help these people, you're going to lose your job. Those policemen have mortgages. They got a couple of kids in college. They got a car payment. They can't afford to buck the line. My daughter's got over $300,000 in medical school debt. She can't risk that just to make a political point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worse than it seems because the government has told our healthcare establishment, this is how you're going to or not going to treat this.
This is called tyranny.
Yes, I've stocked up on ivermectin. I've got all the meds I need here, and I plan to help my family and friends when things go south. But I would encourage more of your listeners to explore your options for obtaining the necessary meds.
Agreed. We have them here at our house as well from the compounding pharmacy. Here, let me tell you, the worm is turning yet again. We just talked about how all of the narratives have turned and been begun to be flipped by the official Washington position or the NIH and CDC. And here we have Jake Tapper discovering that there has been gambling at Rick's.
So I'm shocked.
The hospitals are still stretched thin because of this, so I'm not trying to take away from that. But if 40% in some hospitals, 40% of the people who have COVID don't necessarily have problematic COVID. They're there because they got a car accident. They're there because, they bumped their head. And they're being included as in the hospital with COVID. That number seems kind of misleading.
No.
Kind of.
Yeah,
really?
Sanjay
Gupta starts doing a song and dance.
Let me tell you another big fat one that they've been telling. So this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, and that's no longer the case. I'm going to be starting a Substack here pretty soon, but I sent out a blast email to all my people that I stay in contact with yesterday, and it was COVID numbers from the province of Ontario, Canada, and it showed that approximately 65% of all people hospitalized because of COVID in Ontario in the last month are double vaxxed or boosted.
Yeah.
In ICU, that number was 75%. Now, I've checked, and there's a few countries that are not soiling their data.
That's
right.
In the
United States, you cannot find this information because they do not give hospitalization status according to vaccination.
Yeah, only in New York do they do that. Only in New York.
But if you look all over the world, the numbers are astoundingly similar. And Denmark, Germany, there's a few Central European countries that are releasing data, and the numbers are all very similar. Double vaxxed and double vaxxed plus a booster are the vast majority of people who are now seriously ill with COVID. In fact, Alex Berenson makes a great point that it looks like the more shots you get, the higher your chance of getting COVID and getting it seriously. Soccer players, male soccer players in Europe, are dropping like flies from myocarditis. They can't hide it because in soccer, there's not a lot of timeouts and stoppages of play. So these players are just, you know, they got to run around for 45 minutes and they're boom, dropping. They're the healthiest people on the planet.
Yeah.
And here in America, in the New York Times this last Sunday, the New York freaking Times published a study where they said women's menstrual cycles are being affected by this. Now, this is something that conservatives have known. I knew this in April of 2020. I knew that I knew as soon as they started talking about these vaccines in fall of 2020, I started reading reports of things leaking out that they were causing myocarditis in males under the age of 40.
Yes.
And they were causing all kind of fertility issues in females of childbearing
And they denied it. And they denied it and went about vaccinating women instead.
Yeah. But here's the thing. You got to ask yourself. People ask me when I told them about the New York Times, like, well, why would the New York Times say that? Here's why. And it relates to your switching jerseys at the end of the game analogy.
Mm-hmm.
They know that this stuff is going to come out. They can't. There's too many. There's just too many thousands and thousands of cases where adverse vaccine events. So they're trying to get out in front of it so they can shape the narrative. What we talked about earlier is basically we've played 58 minutes of football. There's 2 minutes left in the game. And we, the conservatives, or amateurs, if you were, we've been bashing their heads in and we're up 65-0. The experts like Fauci and Birx have been wrong, wrong, wrong. Now they realize the game is about up and they're going to put everything up on a big scoreboard. They're going to televise all the highlights. We better get on the right team. And by the way, I want to recommend...
Which is what pollsters do. Pollsters do this every time before an election. They do wildly speculative, aspirational polls. And then as you get closer to the election, they try to reckon their polls a little bit more to reality. And slowly it looks a little bit, instead of Hillary Clinton having a 17-point lead, she might have a 9-point lead kind of a thing.
Right, right. Well, I want to recommend that your listeners read a couple of books. I read Robert Kennedy Jr.'s book,
man.
The Real Anthony Fauci. I mean,
unbelievable.
I had done some research beforehand because I hosted a podcast on him. But the guy is literally guilty of mass murder. He murdered tens of thousands of AIDS patients in the 80s with ATZ?
ATZ.
It was a drug that was worse than
It was killing them. It was literally killing people with AIDS.
It was killing their kidneys. It was shutting their kidneys down. They basically, in order to keep these people who they were studying on ATZ, they had to run them through dialysis every day before they got their ATZ shot or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he's doing the same thing with Remdesivir. Remdesivir. I remember when Remdesivir came out in spring of 2020. I sent the report. I read the abstract, and the last sentence of the abstract said, Remdesivir has no effect on mortality from COVID, from the control group. And I'm like, what? No effect on mortality? Well, what's the big deal?
Yeah, then why are they doing it?
It shortens. Here's the thing. If you live, it does not change the fact whether you're going to live or not. But if you live, it shortens your average stay in the ICU from 15 to 11 days. So I said, this can't be right. I sent it off to a lady who is a professional researcher at Tufts University in Albany, New York. And she came back to me like a week later and said, and used profanity and said, holy, she said, this stuff is useless against COVID.
Yes.
And they're pushing it. And you know what? They're still giving it to people. Right here in Colorado, I had a good friend who died from COVID about a week and a half ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
She went to the hospital. I'm not close with her anymore. She and I were close 30 years ago when I was active in politics. And I heard about it, and she was in ICU on a ventilator. And I said to her daughter, what are they giving? They're going to give her remdesivir. And I'm like, oh, well, she's a goner. Because remdesivir actually has, it causes worse, more problems than it helps. It's a crime that people weren't prescribed ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine.
I know.
And Anthony Fauci is one of the primary reasons for that.
That's what Rand Paul was getting at in the colloquy they had during the Senate hearing.
Wait a minute. Rand Paul has colic?
You're very funny. Where he was talking about the fact that Fauci has been responsible for killing the other side's arguments and science.
Yeah.
And he took it personally. And don't you find it very interesting that Anthony Fauci said, you know, as Senator, every time we talk and you say that I'm lying or I have some problem, you have some problem with something I've done, I get death threats. And I'm thinking to myself, let's talk to someone who's actually been attacked not once, not twice, but three times by the left and almost died four times. You know, Rand Paul at the baseball field when Bernie Sanders supporter comes with a Chinese semi-automatic rifle and starts
SKS.
Picking off Republicans. How about when he goes to the party after the election and he is beaten or he needs he's roughed up by Antifa? How about when his neighbor, for political reasons, attacks him and breaks bones in his body?
Collapses a lung,
sends him to ICU because of his political beliefs. And there's more incident that I'm forgetting.
Well, I just want to go back to Anthony Fauci. The book that by Robert Kennedy Jr., I used to think he was a weirdo. And now everything in his book checks out. The guy, it's a very dense read.
I listened to it on audiobooks. It was much better.
The footnotes, there's probably 100 pages of footnotes, I would guess. The other book I read that was a much easier, it's a weekend read, a very easy read, but it's absolutely essential. And that's Scott Atlas's book,
Plague
Upon Our House.
Yep.
And one of the things you're going to take away from that is just how totally and completely corrupt Anthony Fauci is. And Deborah Birx comes across as literally Sonia Sotomayor-esque in mental ability.
That's bad, man.
It is such an example of the Peter Principle.
The scarf queen.
For those of your younger listeners, the Peter Principle says that a person, an incompetent person in particular, will be promoted until they're promoted just beyond their ability to competently execute their job. Okay? And you see it all the time in school administrations. The people who can't teach effectively get promoted into administration, right? Or they get promoted into the main administration building where they're tasked with reinventing the wheel on a curriculum every 5 years to justify their existence. You see it in big corporations, in government all the time. Mm-hmm. The people who aren't competent to do the rubber where the rubber meets the road jobs, they get promoted into management. And now it's unfortunately come to our military. I have a son in the Army, and he, thank God, he's in the Special Forces, which is yet to be completely co-opted. But the rest of the Army, we went out at Labor Day to the fort where he's stationed, and you could not turn. It was like going to a college campus. The propaganda on diversity, equity, inclusion, the BLM stuff, the sexual harassment. I mean, it was like being at Harvard or you know, UMass. It was just weird. And he told me that that Special Forces, obviously, they get accepted. But the rest
not
of the base.
Not if you're Navy SEAL, it turns out.
They spend all their time on these social justice stuff. And just yesterday or the day before, the Navy announced that they're going to extend boot camp from 6 to 8 weeks so that they can include 2 weeks of social justice training.
Oh, no way. Really?
Yeah, you haven't. Yeah.
I did not hear that.
No, they're going to do 2 weeks of diversity, equity, inclusion, anti-harassment, white supremacy, and that's Navy boot camp.
That's amazing.
I don't want to say we're lost, but we're pretty much lost.
Now, let's go back to some of the COVID facts that they've now retrenched on. And one of the main ones, and we talked about the asymptomatic spread before, but in the Bay Area, California hospitals, this story comes out of the Bay Area, but all California hospitals have been allowed a rule change to get people who are the folks who work in the hospitals, healthcare providers, to get them back in the hospital if they have COVID, if they're asymptomatic. Here we go.
The highly contagious Omicron variant sending more people to Bay Area hospitals and across California. The state issued new guidelines Saturday in an effort to make sure there is enough staff to handle the increase. Healthcare workers testing positive for COVID no longer have to isolate or test negative and can return to work immediately if they're asymptomatic.
If they're asymptomatic. So let me get this straight.
So if you refuse to get vaccinated and you don't have COVID, or better yet, you have had COVID and recovered, so you have bulletproof immunity to COVID. You have broad spectrum immunity to COVID, much better and much more long lasting than any booster shot you're ever going to get. In fact, they're saying now that the boosters, I don't know if you heard this, but the CEO of Pfizer this week was in an interview and he started downplaying the need for a fourth booster. Wonder why they would do that. Wonder why the CEO of Pfizer.
Yeah, tell me why. I saw that in passing. Tell me what the end game is on that.
Because they are not going to be able to hide the side effects. They've been able to keep a lid on all these myocarditis, the menstrual problems, all the other. There's been deaths from these things. Now, they're not going to be able to hide it. So it's one thing to take a jab for something that doesn't do anything, okay? You still get COVID. People are going to go, okay, I mean, I've got a daughter. My number two daughter lives in Chicago. You can't live a life without getting the jab. She's been double jabbed. She just had a nasty bout of COVID.
Oh, well,
and she can't wait to get a booster. And I'm like, OMG, what is wrong with you? You know, but she's suffering from mass formation
psychosis.
But she really is. I mean, it's really a thing. But the reason that the CEO of Pfizer would come out is because it's one thing to take a shot, have no ill effects, and still get the disease you're supposed to be protected from. But on the other hand, if people start finding out that they've been injuring their children permanently in some way, they're going to be pissed as hell. Well, they're not going to put up with that.
And the backstory of why they are pushing vaccinations for children who have almost 0.00, and then you start getting into low numbers, a chance of dying from COVID, is because the incentive to do so has to do with getting legal liability exemptions for the entire line of COVID medications or vaccines, if you want to call them that, in the future. For example, Pfizer is the only approved vaccine. The Pfizer vaccine that has been approved by the FDA is not available yet. So everything is still emergency authorized use. However, they're setting the ducks in order so that they can get legal liability exemption for the final product when it's later rolled out. And the only way they can do that is to get children vaccinated and used as part of the protocol for the schools. Why? I don't understand why they are doing that. I know the financial reasons, but I don't understand why everyone is going along with this.
Let me tell you, I have some thoughts on this. The way, you know, Lenin famously said, give me
the children
to educate or for the schools or whatever, and I'll have society. If they can convince young families, and I know several who have jabbed their kids as young as 5 years of age, I do not understand it. The numbers are so stark. I did, just for my own family, I did the math because my youngest daughter is 23 and she's given consideration to taking the vaccine. She's very influenced by her two older sisters. Her two older brothers not going to get the jab. And I did the math. I did the math for the number of people that are 30 and under in the U.S., and I divided that into the number of people who died with COVID, total number. And the number was 0.0005. So point and then four zeros and then a five.
Mm-hmm.
That's like
sounds
you have
right.
That would be so far down on all-cause mortality. In other words, you have a better chance of being hit by a lightning. You have a better chance of drowning. You have a better chance of dying in a car accident. Higher, much higher. You have a better chance of being, if you live in certain urban areas, you have a better chance of being shot.
Right.
And yet people are getting vaccinated for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason is they're trying to massage the children into thinking this is normal. It's normal
yes.
to get vaccinated for,
that's
we don't know
it.
Why.
Definitely.
So that when they grow up, because one of the hardest things in the world to do, I've always said that Albert Einstein was a really smart guy, but he was wrong about one thing. Actually, I think he was wrong about relatively
things.
And a few other things. But he famously said the greatest force on earth is compound interest. And I think the greatest force on earth is peer pressure. Now, most people walking around today think, oh, peer pressure is something that happened in junior high, maybe high school if you were kind of insecure. No, no. We all have succumbed to peer pressure. We all have people we want to be have the approval of, whether it's our extended family, whether it's the people at church or the people at work or your friends on Facebook, God forbid. But we all want approval. It is a rare person indeed that can go and swim against the current. Now, I happen to be one of those people, and it's very anxiety. It brings a lot of anxiety. I have to tell you, when I got thrown out of stores in 2020 for not wearing a mask, I had done my research, and I knew masks did not do anything. Every scientific journal in the world, JAMA, New England Journal of Medicine, the one out of London,
Lancet.
Called?
Lancet.
Lancet. They all had articles in the winter of 2019 and 2020 that were on masks, and they all basically said the same four things. Masks should be worn by people who are sick with certain respiratory viruses when they're around others. Masks should be worn by certain health individuals, health workers in very limited environments. And I forget one other one. And then, those during a pandemic, those who are at highest risk for if they catch the whatever's the pandemic of getting very sick and dying. And then the fourth line always said healthy individuals should not wear masks. And that was in March or April of 2020. And by May, every one of them had come out and basically
denied it,
flipped it. And here's the weird part, not the weird part. It makes sense. In the first articles that said the truth about masks, they were all well-sourced with research, links to studies, links to evidence, and so on. But the ones that came out in May were nothing more than freaking opinion pieces. They didn't have any research to link to because there wasn't any. So my point about anxiety is it's very hard. I have been through Denver International Airport, I don't know, half dozen, maybe eight times in the last 6 months, either walking my mom to the gate because she's got dementia or myself and my wife flying or whatever. And DIA is like, I don't know, 12th busiest airport in the world, some number like that. And I am the only person not wearing a mask in that airport.
Mm-hmm.
The only one.
I can't believe they don't stop you because, of course, it's a federal law for airports.
I have never been stopped. The only time is when I'm going through TSA, the guy at the beginning of the line says, you got a mask? And I'm like, sure, I do. He goes, well, you know you're going to have to put it on. I said, yep, I will. And then when you get there and they look at your license, they look at my face, I pretend kind of put the mask around my ears, I walk over, I wear it while I'm in the little doohickey where you put your hands over your head. And as soon as I'm out of that, I take it off, put it in my pocket or in the trash, and I've never been stopped by anyone. And I was there the day before Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. one of the busiest travel days of the year. Place was packed, and I couldn't find another face to look at. And we're not going to be able to shake it. They're
I
just
walked
gonna
in the
keep...
store yesterday without a mask, and I was like, oh, I don't have a mask on. Eventually, I saw a guy was like, he was covered. He looked like he was part of Spec Ops or something. It was just, or, you know, I don't even know.
Where do you live? What part are you
I live in the Pacific Northwest in an unnamed location in a bunker.
But still, you live in a pretty blue area.
Oh, yeah.
You see, even, but the thing that scares me is I live in one of the reddest counties in Colorado and one of the reddest counties in America. Mm-hmm. It's not El Paso County, but close. And I say the number of people wearing masks has increased. It was down to about 15% in the grocery store for a while there. And now with all this nonsense on Omicron, it's back up to 75%.
Seriously. Wow.
And here's the way you know it's peer pressure. Most people don't believe these masks do anything.
Right.
That's
because you
see them wearing a mesh mask that's filthy.
Yes.
And if they wear it like a chin strap.
Exactly. Exactly.
So they're not doing it for health reasons.
Yeah.
They're doing it to be part of the crowd. They want to make sure that everybody knows, hey, I'm cool. I'm not going to threaten anybody. I mean, you're wearing a mask that's gray from filth. You know?
Yeah. I actually had to wipe mine off. We have to jump ahead because there's a period at which we probably should wrap, but because I know you're going to riff on this, okay?
So I don't play the guitar.
Barstool Sports
comes
up with a list that they trolled everyone with on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And it is the top 10 male singers of all time, they claim. Here's their list, and you tell me if it's right. Number one, Elvis Presley. Number two, Michael Jackson. These are for the singers, right?
Yep.
Jesse McCartney, Frank. Yeah, exactly. Frank's. I know who Jesse McCartney is, but even Jesse McCartney would go, "What are you talking about?"
Wasn't she that
Frank
really
Sinatra?
Good? Wasn't
Wait,
she that good-looking blonde?
No, okay. Yeah, he's cute blonde. He was Justin Bieber before. Well, he's not really, but I mean, he was sort of that heartthrob, you know, the boy guy. But anyway, Justin Bieber's not on here either. Frank Sinatra, Otis Redding, Adam Lambert, Ryan Cabrera, Stevie Wonder, Chase Hudson. I don't even, who's Chase Hudson? And Bob Dylan. Now, Bob Dylan is one of the worst singers ever. Michael Jackson,
possibly
not a great singer. Great entertainer, but not a great singer.
Okay. So I made a quick list. I just off the top of my head made a list of people that had really great voices. And in due deference, just in humility, I'm one of the most humble people I know. I did not include myself on the list, okay? I could have, but I didn't. George Jones. George Jones, for those who haven't ever listened to him, go to Spotify or Pandora and listen to a couple of George Jones songs. His range was off the charts. He could go way down bass, and he could go all the way to soprano. The guy was amazing.
Wow.
All right. Another one that was just had the most beautiful, spot-on voice was Glenn Campbell. Okay, those are just a couple of country guys. Vince Gill's another one I thought of.
Yeah, he's got a nice voice.
You can't leave any list of great singers off without Tom Jones, the world's most famous Welshman. The chairman of the board, Frank, but also a guy named Jimmy Dean. Jimmy Dean had a very, very mellifluous voice. Oh,
like,
gosh,
Jimmy
Dean
sausage guys. That's
yes,
exactly.
That guy.
Exactly.
Don Williams is another one. He's the one that had a hit with Living on Tulsa Time. He had a very low baritone voice. Ronnie Millsap. In rock, obviously, Freddie Mercury would be right there with George Jones.
Where's that guy?
Yeah, he is the best rock male singer. Let's see. Another guy that's forgotten but had a beautiful voice and could do really interesting things with his voice was Roy Orbison.
Yes, definitely.
He could do some really off-the-charts things. Then you've got Marvin Gaye and Ray Charles over on the R&B side.
Yes.
Al Green. I just read a short biography of Barry White yesterday. It was pretty interesting.
Ooh.
He died way too young.
He had a wonderful voice. My son's mother, who is, she lives in Mexico.
Your son's mother?
I mean, my son-in-law's mother. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, sorry.
Because, I mean, your son's mother, I think I'm talking to her.
She's my consuegra. So she loves Barry White. She just has gone gaga. And he was not probably even her era at all, but but she just absolutely, she's mad for him. She's absolutely mad for him. I just find that so refreshing and hilarious.
You know, another guy like him is a guy named Isaac Hayes.
Oh, yes.
Isaac Hayes had bit parts in Rockford Files. Also Rockford Files. And Lou Rawls is another one.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can't leave Robert Plant off the list.
Of course
lead singer for Led Zeppelin.
Yes.
He was crazy. But anyway, I thought that list was a joke. I mean, I'm fairly well read. I mean, I read and listen to a lot and know a lot of music, and I didn't know 5 of the people to the 10 people on the list. So,
yeah. I mean, Ryan Cabrera, Adam Lambert, those are all people from the television show American Idol. I'm sure they have, I know they have fine voices, but I'm sorry. That's your list then. I mean, that's a pretty darn good list.
It's like saying, who's the greatest quarterback of all time? I mean, it's not Tom Brady. I mean, let's just be honest, because he's a cheater. But it could be anybody else. It could be Montana, could be Elway, could be Patrick Mahomes, but not Tom Brady. But you just can't – you got to – in an era, you know, you got Johnny Unitas.
Right, you have to do an era.
Before Johnny Unitas, there was Sammy Baugh, you know, the center used to come up and tell the linebacker, Mr. Baugh is going to pass again, basically saying, you know, try and stop him. The same way that they had the famous story about Ted Williams, arguably the greatest hitter of all time, is that when a catcher would say, hey,
unless you're Tony Gwynn,
that was a strike. Tony Gwynn was, he'd be in the top 200 probably.
Oh, stop. Stop that.
Tony Gwynn.
He is my idol.
No, he was a great player and a better human being. Yeah, and a better human being. And Tony Gwynn Jr. is responsible for allowing the Colorado Rockies to make it to the playoffs and get to the World Series in 2007, because it was Tony Gwynn Jr. who was at the plate in Milwaukee who hit a double to score the winning run against the Padres, and it forced the Padres to come to Denver to play a play-in game. The Rockies won 22 of 23 in that last 23 games of the season. I went to the play-in game against the Padres at Coors Field. It went 14 innings, had numerous score changes. Rockies won it, and they went on to be swept by the Red Sox in 4.
I do remember that. Sorry.
I remember everything.
Yeah, well, that's great. So you're not only are you an autodidact, but you are a man who has a photographic memory or whatever.
I did not work on cars, but whatever you say.
Yeah, sure. Well, this has been fun, Mark. We have to do it again. Sure appreciate your time.
I had a blast, and I want you to know I got great feedback when you were on my show, and so hopefully you'll get the same kind of positive feedback from your listeners.
Excellent. Now, stay right there. I just want to say thank you once again, and thank you for coming on the Adult in the Room podcast. Now, hold there for just a second.
Can I give one plug?
Sure, of course. Yeah, sorry.
I'm going to be starting a Substack shortly. I'm going to need to get some help with the technology part of it, as you probably know. But I think I'm going to be under – I'll have some catchy name, but my name on the podcast will be – or the Substack will be Mark, middle initial S as in Sam, Griffith. Mark S. Griffith.
There's some
other Mark Griffiths out there. Some singer in Seattle has got the website markgriffith.com. Mm. So I've always gone with my middle initial, which is Shannon. I'm an Irishman. So anyway, so in the next couple of weeks – if your listeners are interested in coming to see what I have to say, I am very well read. I have a great memory, and I write about interesting things, and I do bring God into the conversation as often as I can.
Mark, thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Adult in the Room podcast. To keep the programs you like to listen to, please rate this podcast with a fantastic 5 stars on your Apple Podcast app every time you listen, and give me a great review. Plus, of course, subscribe to the podcast. It makes a difference with the big tech algorithm and the big tech oligarchs, and it makes us easier to find. Please get in touch with me on all the big tech stuff. Yeah, we're still there. Using the names Victoria Taft or the Adult in the Room podcast on MeWe, Parler, Minds, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks to 1ACast for imaging, editing, and production. The fantastic song is Gospel by the March 4th Band of Portland, Oregon. Music for Antifa versus Mike Strickland is Ride or Die by Raps by RC. The Adult in the Room podcast is also a production of Flamingo Road Studios. Remember, head up, heart out, and strive to be the adult in the room. Till next time, mischief managed.